Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Unshriven on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Alan and Hugh. On tonight's show, we will be chatting to Dan Bowe, marketing manager and presenter of The Fool and the Opera on Joy on a Sunday. Dan will talk about his home life with Vietnamese parents who came here and were the original boat people. Dan will also talk about his very successful show on a Sunday, The Fool and the Opera. Once again, we have another great discussion coming up here on Unshriven, so please stay with us for the next hour on Joy 94.9.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon with tonight Hugh and me, Alan. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
We seem to be working a lot lately. In case where people are wondering, by the way, Aline is pretty heavily stressed out with work issues at the moment. So we and she's going on holidays in the middle of June, which means that she's taking a break from Orange Ribbon until she goes on holiday. So in case listeners are wondering, Aline will be back, but she won't be back until she returns from Europe, which will be sometime in around the middle of July.
She's going to Gay Paris.
Going to Gay Paris, and she's going to go to Gay Pride Paris while she's there, so we might get to hear something about Parisian Gay Pride when she comes back from Europe.
Now, on the show tonight, we have Dan Bowe, marketing manager and presenter of The Fool and the Opera on a Sunday. Welcome to Unshriven, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Dan, let's start with your background. Your parents are Vietnamese. Just give us a little bit of background of how they came to Australia.
Okay, sure. They're part of the, after the war, there was a few waves of immigrants to various countries that were accepting Vietnamese immigrants at the time, Australia being one of them. And so their second wave, a second wave of immigrants sort of left Vietnam at around about the early 80s through to about the mid-80s, just because of economic reform. Like, things were getting pretty terrible in Vietnam at the time after the communists took over.
Didn't actually come together, though, did they?
No, they didn't come together. They were single, and they kind of came separately. Dad ended up going to, I think, via Thailand to Perth, and Mum via Malaysia to Melbourne. And then eventually Dad moved across from Perth to Melbourne because there was just a bigger Vietnamese community here in Melbourne. They met, and I popped out a couple of
But they came via boat, though, or if they went via Thailand, though, how did they end up in Australia then?
Look, I don't know my dad's story very well because he'd never really told us the story. With my mother, my sister and I, we've kind of picked up pieces as we've gone. The thing about it is I think a lot of, well, I'm going to generalize, but I think a lot of Vietnamese parents kind of don't tell their kids about the true story about what happened, because it is pretty horrific what happened. For Mum, I understand that she left via a boat where they crammed a lot of people in under the decks and just sailed and hoped that they would hit land somewhere. It happened that she hit Malaysia, and so they were then put into a camp where basically they waited for processing from different countries. And in my mum's case, she was assigned Melbourne as the new place to relocate.
I guess where
to.
I was coming from there, because I think the first wave of boat people actually did come to Australia in these rickety boats that you're, and certain other interview that we did on Orange Ribbon about 5 or 6 years ago, one of the guys that we interviewed actually was on one of those boats and made it all the way to Australia. But the second wave, I think, is what you were referring to. They tended to go to some of these other countries closer to Vietnam, into the camps, and then ultimately were sort of juggled to various countries around the world, which is what I think happened with your parents.
Yeah. Was your father actually involved in the war?
My dad was involved in the war, not via... He was, you know, conscripted, but he wasn't on the battlefield so much. He was more reconnaissance and that sort of stuff. And it's interesting that, I suppose, you know, we'll probably talk about my relationship with him a little bit later, but we don't really share those sort of stories between the family. And, you know, part of... as me as I am, about 25 now, the interesting thing for me is I am about the age that my parents were when they sort of got rid of everything in their life and jumped in these boats and set sail and, you know, hoped for the best. So it's kind of, I'm coming to the awareness that, you know, this is what age they were at and the mind frame in which they were sort of dealing with these sort of things. So for me, I'm kind of now getting more and more interested in what the story was and starting to sort of pull together as many pieces as I can.
I suppose you can imagine people who come in these boats, and it must be horrendous. you know, and it must be overcramped, and the sanitation must be really bad. So it would probably be something you'd want to put out of your mind, you know, rather than keep talking about it over the years.
Yeah, I mean, my uncle, kind of when we were growing up, he kind of was very free to talk about it, and we kind of heard stories about, you know, how he had friends who had, you know, tooth infections, so they'd just get a bunch of pliers and just hold the man down and pull out the tooth, and that's it, you know.
So
and they got the wrong tooth, so they'd have to get, you know, keep on going
back and do the right one.
But it's a little bit like thinking about the war. I mean, we're talking about a totally different issue in a way, but I go back to, like, my grandfather was in the Second World War, and thinking, well, I can remember thinking when I was in my early 20s, in fact, late teens, and thinking, at my age, my grandfather was fighting in a war. And you try to think, well, if that's me now, when I was 18 or 19 or 20, and trying to think, well, how would I cope? And in exactly the same way that you're saying here with your parents, in coping with starting a new life again.
But I think just leaving your family behind. Did your mother ever talk about having to leave family behind? Or?
Well, when she left, she was probably one of the last children who remained of my grandparents. She's one of 10 kids. I have to think about that, because the way that the Vietnamese counts children, the parents come first, so they are called one, and the first child's the second, so it gets confusing sometimes. So she's one of 10, and she was one of the last ones to leave, so she stayed with my grandparents until almost the very end. There were two family members still over there at the moment, and so she left, and so by that stage, you know, they kind of were trying to encourage her to leave go for a better life.
What about your life at home as Vietnamese parents? What language did you speak?
I spoke Vietnamese growing up, and I actually remember a moment in my life where my thinking stopped being Vietnamese and switched over to English. And it was around about in prep, and it was my Lego men were talking to each other. And, you know, I remember the Lego men stopped talking in Vietnamese and started talking in English. So growing up, you know, I kind of came from a very Vietnamese background. My grandparents, because my parents worked quite a lot, you know, Dad did night shift and Mum did day shift, so they kind of just kept on, you know, it was like, what's that saying? Ship's passing the night.
Ship passing the night.
Yeah, and so my grandparents sort of raised me, and they sort of raised me in a very Vietnamese way, I suppose. So that's sort of the growing up, I was very aware of the fact that, you know, I was from Vietnamese background as opposed to, you know.
Because for somebody whose first language was Vietnamese, you don't have the accent, do you? You have a very Aussie accent.
Yeah, I think just growing up in a very, you know, Anglo-Saxon school, I think there was five Asian kids in there in the school.
But I think the age has a lot to do with that. Yeah, I'm sure I've quoted this story before, but I have a very good Scottish friend who's the same age as myself. We were both born on the same day. He and I were the same age. He came to Australia when he was, I think, 13 or 14, and his younger brother came to Australia when he was 10 or 11. The older sibling has never totally lost his accent. He's almost. But the younger sibling, no accent whatsoever.
Just like myself.
Yeah. I mean, I think around about 12, you still have the ability to adapt your accent a bit. And I remember at 12, I was still pronouncing some street names and all this sort of stuff the way that my mother did. And I remember the kids laughing at me. And that's when I kind of went, right, I have to change the way I pronounce it. Yeah, so.
This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven, the multicultural show, with Dan Vo. Dan, we were talking a little bit about your life, but before we go on to further, let's talk about the music.
Sure. We've just played two tracks. That one was just, I'm going to pronounce it incorrectly, and it's something I always do in my program as well, so I'm going to do it on everyone else's program now. I haven't got all the little accents, so I can't read it properly, but Ming Doi Hui Wang, I think, is how it's pronounced, and the performer is Can Li. She's one of Vietnam's most prominent female artists. She, during the war, she was the main singer of a bunch of works for a composer named Trinh Công Sơn, and he's kind of like our Simon and Garfunkel, something like that. You know, he writes a lot of music that especially during the war, there was a lot of I suppose he's a pacifist. Like, all the music was about, it didn't matter which side the victims were from, he would write very beautiful songs about, you know, their story and their plight. And in that particular song, there's a line that I always sort of come back to, and it's, you know, my soul is at peace, but why am I so restless? And I think that the song now, in the context of our current world, a lot of Vietnamese people, especially of my parents' generation and their parents, they sort of listen to that song, they sort of think, I'm restless because I'm not at home. Wherever I am, I'm at peace. There's peace in this country I am, but I'm not at home.
You're not at home, yeah.
And a lot of our music is all about longing. It's longing for this, I suppose, sense of Wehung, which is kind of like the place of origin. And it doesn't exist anymore. You know, you can never go back to the place ever, regardless of whether or not there was a war. But that's what we all long for.
Was music a big thing at home with your parents? Did they play a lot of Vietnamese music?
They did. And I was saying before to you that, you know, a lot of Vietnamese music has the cheesy synthesizer. I grew up with lots of synthesized music. And, you know, it might have been just because we didn't have the money in the Vietnamese community to have full orchestras or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, music is very important. And the track that we played at the very start is sort of a remixed version of an old folktale called Linga O, and it's about a man dressing his horse because, you know, back in the old days, you'd dress your horse to go pick up your bride, you know, and take her home, and that's what the story's about. So that's one of the first songs I remember my grandma on my dad's side singing to me as a kid. So I think growing up, music has had a really profound effect in sort of understanding, I suppose, the emotion behind what my parents were feeling, what my grandparents were feeling. In terms of the music, is always quite melancholy. It's always embedded with a lot of sadness and a sense of longing. So,
Your grandparents, they came across here. They weren't boat people. They just came and joined the family here, didn't they?
Yeah, once my mother got over here and she sort of established herself in terms of, you know, had a regular wage and can prove that she could sponsor them. There was a program where, you know, certain people with, you know, older people.
Immediate family, older family members and whatever.
Yeah, it could be brought over. So that's how my grandparents came.
So how old were they when they came?
I think they were around about late 50s, 60s. You know, numbers in my family, age-wise, isn't very clear. So, but, you know, so they came over, and I remember my grandfather was, you know, had cataracts, so he was blind at the time, and, he, you know, both of them couldn't speak, so it was a huge culture shock for
them. As in speak English, you mean?
Speak English, yeah. And, you know...
It's pretty late in life as well to learn another language, isn't
it? Yeah,
you know, it
must
have been difficult for them.
It was very difficult, but I think that, you know, these are the grandparents that sort of raised me as a child, and my sister as well, as a child, sort of, you know, when I was growing up, they were learning English, and they learnt English. They were very good at speaking English and made friends with all the neighbours. And and my grandfather had, you know, had cataract surgery, and, you know, he could see again. So for them, it was a completely new beginning, and I think they took to it really well, and, yeah, they made the most of it.
And which raises another interesting side story. He had cataract surgery, presumably here. Would that have been something that might have been impossible had they remained in Vietnam, or would they have been able to have gone through that in Vietnam in later years?
I think that it would have been incredibly difficult, and I don't think it would have happened, particularly with him. I ended up doing some work for, you know, the cataract surgery surgeons in Australia, and, you know, the technology that we've advanced in the last, you know, couple of years has been phenomenal, and the sort of surgery that he got was very good, and that sort of stuff didn't come into Vietnam until, you know, much, much later. So, yeah, he was, you know, very lucky to be here and be able to have that sort of service.
This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh, and we'll be back soon.
You want choice? You've got it. Joy.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, and tonight we are speaking to Dan, who's the marketing manager and presenter of The Fool and the Opera on a Sunday night. And we were talking about your family, Dan, and your grandparents. Now, your grandparents are no longer with us, are they?
No, they're both. My grandfather passed away when I was in year 8, and my grandmother when I was in first year uni. So,
but off air, you were telling us about your watch that you wear. Do you want to tell the listener about your watch?
It's a very beautiful old watch. It's a digital watch, so my grandfather had this. It was gifted to him from my parents when he first came out, and after the cataract surgery he could read again, so
right.
That's why he got a watch.
Okay.
It still runs. I've got the watch now, and I wear it every day, sort of as a reminder, I suppose, of him and the principles of which he raised me. And the watch is, I've found out as well, since going back and going to the watchman and finding out about it, it's the same age that I am. The watch is 25, I'm 25, so I suppose it's...
You treasure it. No?
Yeah, I do.
And it's in good nick for being 25 years old, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think that's, my grandfather was, in terms of the way he lived, he was a very simple man. He believed in, honesty, and believed in, good human interaction. And, with material possessions, he believed in only... buying what you need or using what you need and everything that you had. He was very good at recycling. Before everyone started, collecting water and stuff, he was collecting water. He had a great garden, a very beautiful garden. And I suppose that, when you lose your sight and you get it back again, I suppose that was one of the things that he kind of...
How long was he without his sight for?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think at least...
Years or just a year or two?
No, I think a few years. I think about half a decade. And from where... We were, our family on, my mother's side, we were from a farming background. So, for him being able to sort of see the plants and interact with the earth again, I think was a really important thing.
Let's talk a little bit about Dan. Now, when did you realize you were gay?
There's a few moments, I suppose, of realization and denial.
We've all been there.
Yeah. from grade prep, I can remember having a crush on this boy in class in grade 3 and in grade 4 and it was suppressed at all times. I suppose the first moment where I kind of realized that it was actually, that the word gay existed was when a boy in grade 4 said, "Well, that means you're gay." And I went, "Oh, no, it doesn't." And then... I suppressed all those thoughts, and later on I found the station Joy when I was around about, I suppose, 16 or so, and for me, having a program where... I remember listening to this program where there was a young gay boy, a gay lass, a lesbian, and they rotated between, I think, a transgender person or a bisexual person, and they're all young, and that was a really amazing moment where, this realization that there are people out there who have the same, feelings for people of the same sex. So that was... When it came, I started to think more about it, but it wasn't until sort of end of year 12 before, somebody had to sit me down and say, "You are gay." No, maybe. Okay, yeah, you're right.
But was it different for you because of the fact that you were seen as Vietnamese and a little bit different anyway? Did that make it seem slightly more uncomfortable or difficult for you?
Yeah, I ended up having a period where I was bisexual. And I think that the reason why that was because for that period of time, I was... reconciling myself with the fact that I was not going to have kids the way that Vietnamese culture expects you to have kids. And it's a tricky topic that we're going to probably move into, which is, I think that when I came out as well to my parents, there was difficulty with my father accepting my sexuality, because I think in many respects he had difficulty accepting or working through his own. So in Vietnamese culture, it's a very Confucian society where you, as the boy, have to marry and have to have another boy to carry on the family name. And
you're the only boy, so...
Of this line of vote, I am the last one.
Right.
There's huge amounts of pressure on me from my dad's side to carry on that name.
Do you think you ever would? By that I mean, in your current gay life, do you think there might be a time in the future at some stage where you might... consider having a child of your own?
I'd love to have kids. I really like kids. And I've grown up, having on my mother's side so many kids and cousins, that I sort of helped raise. So I love kids. And I just don't know how, the practicalities. I can't work out just yet, so...
Well, we know the mechanics. It's the other social issues around it.
Dan's been slightly red here. How did your mother take it when you told her?
I remember I'd not come home that night, and it was because I'd come out to my cousin, and he was trying to work his way around it and sort of, guide me through it as well. And I saw it, she was like, "I can't believe you didn't tell me that you weren't coming home, blah, blah, blah." And that's when I sort of came out. I was like, "Well, would you still love me if I was gay?" I think was the question. And it looked like a brick wall had just hit her face, you know, like she was just stunned. And then sort of she started crying. But I think that after... I suppose that went on for about a year or so. Like, she just couldn't cope. Like, there was a moment where I was holding hands with a boy in the car. And, you know, that was, you know, another realization. Like, there was just these staggering moments of, you know, incremental moments of, you know...
At which age are we talking about just here?
This is first year uni.
Right, okay, yeah. 18, 19-ish, sort of.
Yeah, thereabouts. So, I think that now, where we are at, she's quite... accepting of it. And on her side of the family, they're quite accepting as well. And, you know, I'm...
How did your sister take it?
I laugh because I didn't come out to her properly. I'm very bad. I left a bunch of magazines, DNA magazines, on my bed, and I was moving rooms at the time. I was like, oh, can you just grab the magazines from my bedroom?
Do you know, this story is so familiar. We talk to so many people who do this. It's the magazines that give it away.
Look, I don't think that my relationship with her actually properly started until I came out. It was like we always had something that held us back, and now, you know, and she's my younger sister. She's 5 years younger, but I think she's about 10 years older than me mentally. You know, she's the one that I go to for support, and, you know, I talk through problems like, oh, I'm at this point, I don't know what to do, and she's like, okay, well, this is not what you need to do. And, you know, da, da, da. So,
let's come back to this, Dan. This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven, and tonight we have Dan Vo, our marketing manager and presenter of The Fool and the Opera. Dan, before we go any further, let's talk about very briefly about the music we just played.
Yes, Paul just came in and said, Vietnamese tango?
Tango.
He's jealous because his show's coming up next. He doesn't have this music.
Tango, the French influence is very evident in that, clearly. And there's a lot of paso doble, cha-cha-cha. I was introduced to those words via Vietnamese music rather than via the usual, you know, dances. I didn't realize there were dances until much later in life. That one is... sung by Duc Tung, who is going to soon release a classical CD, a Vietnamese... Okay. So he's a Vietnamese tenor, and he's about to sing some opera, which is nice. And going back a song before that, Nhìn Những Mùa Thu Đi, is by Hồng Nhung, and it's a beautiful song that I sort of... I moved out of home for a little while, and while I was away, I ended up feeling really nostalgic and needing the music that I was surrounded by. And that was one of the tracks I found. And it's a new interpretation of a Trinh Công Sơn song, and it's beautiful. So.
Okay. We have a message here. Unfortunately, we don't know who it's from, but great interview and very interesting. So whoever you are, thank you very much for sending that in.
Thanks.
Now, Dan, let's talk about you. Before the music break, we were talking about how you came out and who you came out to, but and you spoke about how your mother took it a little bit badly, but we didn't speak about your dad. How's your relationship with your dad once you told him?
Well, my relationship with my dad has been a bit on-off for quite a few years anyway, and growing up, you know, he was... In Vietnamese culture, you know, you revere your parents and all that sort of stuff, and there's a very strong hierarchy. Whereas, I suppose, in Western culture, there's not that strong of a hierarchy, you know. I know friends who, you know, call their parents by their first name. With my father, he kind of maintained that sort of very strict sense of hierarchy. And, you know, I suppose I lived for a few years, growing up, I lived in fear of him. But I suppose at some stage, when I was coming to grips with my own sexuality, like, I felt that I'd sort of surpassed his emotional, emotional level of capacity to understand. And at the moment, we don't talk to each other. My parents have had a divorce a few years ago, and it coincidentally coincided with around about the time that I came to Joy, about 5 years ago. Wow, 5 years ago. And the thing is, I don't know, like, how do you sort of... Whose fault is it when, or is it anybody's fault when a relationship between parent and child breaks up? And in my case, it's because, as I sort of alluded to before, I think he is struggling with his own sexuality.
Right.
And...
Is this why your parents divorced, or was that part of the problem?
The reason why they divorced is Mum and Dad have had a very rough relationship while I was growing up, and I remember seeing stuff as a kid that I don't think any kid should see, you know. And it just came out in an argument where he said, "Well, I never loved you anyway." And for her, that was, you know, the final straw.
Mm.
So
it's hard when somebody says that to you, isn't it?
It is, especially when, you know, you've had everyone sort of say you should just move on or whatever, and my mum sort of stuck around for a while going, no, you know, I kind of believe in this can work out. So, you know, and she keeps on saying, you know, she's stuck in it for my sister and I. And the thing about it is, you know, the relationship with my father and I at the moment is I don't talk to him. He tries to get in touch, but I find it difficult that, you know, he still wants me to be heterosexual and have a kid just to carry on the name. That's difficult for me to come to grips with. I think over time, I believe that over time anything can be mended. That's, you know, my fundamental belief. And I, you know, that's...
Do you find it hard to accept what your father would like you to do because of his sexual preference at the moment?
Could you repeat that one more time?
Do you find it difficult? Your father obviously wants you to get married and have a baby.
Yeah, well, because he did name. It.
Yes, maybe. But your father's sexual preference, do you think he's sort of ignoring that fact too?
Yeah, I think I have an unrealistic expectation that he will, you know, stop finding religion again and just work himself out emotionally. Right. But the reality is, he grew up in a very strict Confucian society, within a society where, you know, gays were considered communists, and that's the ultimate insult you can give to a South Vietnamese person. I suppose, especially within the society that he grew up. And, you know, he kind of lived through a war where you see horrific things that... And I think that there are a lot of men within Vietnamese culture of his generation where, you know, they've seen... And they're crippled emotionally because they have seen so many things that they have just had to completely shut down.
Let's move on to a little bit about to Joy. Now, you just mentioned a little bit earlier 5 years at Joy. What did you start at Joy with?
I started in the events team.
And why? And how?
Look, I spent my coming out period. I didn't, and I still don't really go to clubs and that sort of thing. You know, I prefer, especially now, I much prefer the company of quiet music, you know, and people who join me to see opera or chamber music and that sort of thing. So I've not really been able to go into a club and feel this is me. So, you know.
So you started with Joy. When did you move into marketing?
Well, it's been a sort of a strange journey. I started in sponsorship and then moved across to promotions. Doing Radiothon has been the big thing that I've been working on, and I still do and hold that. But, you know, we just picked up jobs, and there's always more jobs than there are people here.
I know.
So if you want to become a volunteer, please do.
A little push there. So as your job in marketing, you obviously are strongly into the Radiothon and organizing everything. I mean, anything that happens at Joy, you organize, don't you?
Well, you know, there's a team of people, there's a dedicated core staff here, and then there's a wonderful volunteer team who just, you know, they make everything easy to do sometimes. Radiothon is probably one of those really important things that happens at the station. It's coming up in June, so it's kind of just a stone's throw away.
Give us a sneak preview. What's happening?
Well, okay.
Come on. You can do it.
This year, because we always like to pick themes, you know how everyone likes to call, you know, the GLBTIQ community, like the alphabet soup? We're going to take that and sort of use it in a really positive way this year, and it's going to be the alphabet soup theme. And
I've seen some photographs, actually.
Right. Yes, you're in one of them.
I'm in one.
So if you're a current member, you'll get this wonderful magazine here coming out soon with some great photos of with Joy people with soup cans, that sort of thing. And if you're not a member, well, you know, Radiothon's the time that we ask you to become a member, because we need membership support to keep the station running. You know, it basically helps us sort of guide a year's worth of planning, and, you know, pays for a lot of things that, you know, we just couldn't do without the support.
It's the Hear is coming out soon as well, and Orange Ribbon is in Hear this time, isn't it?
Yes, you've got a nice...
I think we might feature actually.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a good thing, but there's a photograph of us. Thank you, Dan. So tell me, what else are you going to do and enjoy? How long are you going to stay with us? And you know, what's next? What's going to happen?
Well, it's also you should touch on your program as well, because we sort of touched on it, but basically what's Fool in the Opera all about?
The Fool in the Opera is opera for beginners by beginners. I'm a complete newbie to opera. I love it. And I'm still taking the journey, and I suppose I just want to take people on the journey with me. And, you know, we've done some really cool things in the last two seasons. We've managed to have some master singers come on to the show, like, who, you know, are well-respected internationally. And we've also had brand-new opera singers emerging come onto the show, and we've also had, you know, we've broken opera from written by a Thai gay composer living in Tasmania. So he wrote a Thai opera in Tasmania.
Okay.
So that was really cool.
That's different.
You know.
We interviewed a Thai gay writer in Canberra who writes for the Thai gay market not recently.
Yeah, so this whole sense of internationality, you know, and so we're going to continue to do things like that. And, you know, surprisingly, we've had a lot of gay composers, opera singers, and all this sort of stuff come onto the program as well. And ultimately, we just want to make it fun, you know.
Yeah.
Opera, people just sort of think of it as this hoity-toity, high-shelf sort of thing. It's not, you know. It is made for the people and anyone. Well, everyone loves opera.
That's right. You've proven that it's for everyone,
isn't
it?
You do tend to pick the more pop... Well, not always, but I certainly hear you playing some of the more poppy...
Popera,
yes, I guess that's a word.
Well, we've had Kate Miller-Heike on the show to talk about Jerry Springer, the opera. So it's really about just making it as accessible as possible because, you know... Everyone has grown up with Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd singing, you know, opera. Or, you know, more recently, kids growing up will have seen Homer Simpson singing, you know. And so it's you know, when you sort of break it down to the bare basics of it, it is a really fun, exciting and emotionally gripping sort of art form that is just wonderful.
It must keep you very busy, though. I mean, because you've got your job at Joy and you've got the show at Joy. I mean, how much time do you spend here?
Oh, I
see you. The weirdest time.
He's always here. He's always here.
You sleep here.
I've stopped doing that. But, no, it's a lot of fun to be at the station. It's a wonderful station. So,
well, thank you very much.
Doing Radiothon.
Yes.
So Radiothon coming up in just 2 or 3 weeks' time, or whenever it is.
June 12th.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Dan, for coming on Driven and giving us your story tonight.
Thank you so much.
It's been very good. That's On Driven for another week. Our special thanks to Dan Vohl, marketing manager and presenter of The Fool and the Opera. Coming up next on Joy 94.9 is Simon and Paul with Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us on Driven tonight. We'll be back again at 7 o'clock next Wednesday with more insights into our GLBT community here in Australia and around the world. A big thank you to Nick and his new trainee, Corey, on reception. Welcome to On Driven, Corey. From Alan and myself, Hugh, good night.
Bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.